Welcome, everybody. Peter Werby sitting in for Mike Malloy. Mike and Kathy and little Molly off tonight for Christmas Eve? I don't know. I don't think they do that. Maybe they do. You know, when you get a kid, that kind of changes everything, even if you're a hardcore atheist like Mike Malloy. Am I characterizing him correctly, folks? I'm broadcasting from chilly Detroit, Michigan, where I do a talk show on a regular basis here. You can call us at 800-989-1480, 800-989-1480. We're going to have some guests, and kind of unusual for Christmas Eve, but I'll tell you about that in just a minute or so. Now, it's interesting that I even identified Mike as an atheist. I could be wrong. He could be an agnostic. I know he doesn't like religion too well, neither do I. In fact, I call myself and describe myself as an atheist, which is interesting in and of itself, which is one of the reasons, of course, that I'm broadcasting here tonight. In fact, one time, a disc jockey here in Detroit, when I was a music DJ, a rock and roll DJ, I was scheduled to work Christmas Eve, and he was scheduled to work New Year's Eve. Now, he had just joined AA and had a problem with drinking, so I went to him and I said, Mark, since you've given up booze and found religion, which he had, and I'm going the opposite way, how about if we trade days, okay? So I'll do Christmas Eve, because I couldn't care less that it's Christmas Eve, and you can do New Year's, because you can't do what a lot of people do on New Year's Eve. Although, have you noticed that people have not been imbibing as much as they used to? They used to do it a lot, right? People get blown out drunk, right? That, fortunately, has not happened very much. But let me talk to you a little, and if you'd like, we'll get you on the air at 800-989-1480 about publicly being an atheist. About 4 years ago, there was an opinion poll. And they had all these negative categories that people would not like to have their daughter marry. And remember, it used to be like it would be like racial groups. That was the lowest. But this time in recent years, that oftentimes Muslims became people that a category, a despised category, you know, a real racist reaction to the acts of a very, very, very few number of people and spreading that across a whole ethnic and religious group. So it turned out that atheists were lower than Muslims, that we, you know, supposedly that didn't even exist statistically, according to popular belief, we were the lowest of the low. That didn't want. It was like the 50s or something like that, when good white Americans wanted their kids to marry white. Well, now they wanted somebody to marry somebody that was God fearing. But George W. Bush and all these hypocrites, all these liars, these phony Christians that have been exposed, involved in so many shenanigans politically and sexually. In fact, these Republicans, they have such a long list of pedophile crimes. Maybe I'll read you a few of those a little later in the night, if Mike hasn't. Mike covers that kind of stuff very frequently, that they have actually blown the legitimacy out from under Christianity to the point where many young people who believe in Jesus, believe in the divinity of Jesus, don't even call themselves Christians anymore. This was from a poll. Actually, I think I heard Mike talking about this one night, that there was a poll where a lot of young people who believe in the divinity of Jesus call themselves the followers of Jesus. They don't even call themselves Christians, because they think that Christianity represents intolerance and prejudice and hypocrisy and everything that, thanks to George W. Bush and his cronies and his followers, that it accurately portrays that. Now, I've got a lot of religious friends. That's one of those things. Some of my best friends are religious. Well, actually, none of my best friends are religious. They're all atheists or agnostics like me. But some of my good friends, and particularly my friends in the peace and social justice movement here in Detroit, in the Detroit area, they actually are very religious. And in fact, it is their religion. Mostly Christians, but some observant Jews and some Muslims are motivated towards seeking a fair, peaceful, environmentally sound world by how they read the Bible or the Quran or the Torah, right? And when they hear me on my Detroit show denouncing religion, you would think, oh, man, this is going to be so offended and what have you. And, they're not. I think they're a little embarrassed by, because they know that I have such a diametrically opposed view to theirs. And so we kind of agree never really to talk about it. Once in a while, there'll be, you know, some of the ministers I know, a little teeny bit of a joke will go between us. But I usually initiated by them. I usually stay away from them because I have just so much respect for these people. And yet, so much, I think, organized religion, all of the organized religions of the world, the horrendous, murderous deeds that they've committed over the centuries so far outweigh these good people. And they have a real good community, too. And they'd like me to be part of it. They are so generous of spirit. They're so open. And it almost makes me look the opposite. I'm going, rawr, 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 you know, like that. Militant atheist and all that. And yet, I would like to be part of their community. I just can't buy their basic belief at all. We're going to be talking a lot more about this, about unbelief and its ability now to not have to have an underground presence. We can actually raise our head above ground and say who we are. And think about all the popular books, too, that have come out in the recent years. At 10 o'clock Eastern, that's a, you know, next hour, we're going to be talking with Tom Flynn. Tom Flynn has just edited the new Encyclopedia of Unbelief. My wife said to me, "You're really going to talk about atheism on Christmas Eve?" I said, "Oh, what the hell? You know, I can be perverse as all get out, right?" At 35 minutes after this hour, we're going to be talking with David Enders. David Enders is a journalist who has spent more than 2 years in Iraq. He's got a book out called Baghdad Bulletin, and the Bushies are still trying to sell us this BS that, oh, everything's going our way and what have you. And I kind of want to look at that pronoun, our, who is our, still isn't going the way of the Iraqi people. They're just still in such incredibly miserable circumstances. So tomorrow, right, is Christmas Day, and Christmas Day for observant Jews has always been, they've always talked about a Jewish Christmas, which is jokingly said to be Chinese food and a movie. But I think it should be called Jewish / or maybe get Muslim in there too, / atheist Christmas. So the movie that I'm going to go see is The Golden Compass, because the Vatican has condemned it as godless and hopeless. In fact, Mike Malloy and Kathy Malloy saw it and said they can't understand why the Christians are upset about it. But the Vatican this week condemned the film, The Golden Compass, which some have called anti-Christian, saying it promotes a cold, hopeless world without God. In a long editorial, the Vatican newspaper, L'Osservatore Romano, slammed Philip Pullman, the best-selling author of the book on which the family fantasy movie is based. Family fantasy movie is based. I've seen the trailer. It looks pretty cool. It was the Vatican's most stinging broadside against an author and a film since it roundly condemned The Da Vinci Code in 2005 and 2006, which did nothing. I mean, why do they do this? Are they being paid by the PR people? Doesn't that make you want to go see it? I didn't even consider for a second going to see this. Look like another goofball film. I don't usually go see. Vatican condemns it. I'm there, right? And remember, in The Da Vinci Code, and I can't remember whether this was in the film or just in the book, but one of the characters says that Christianity was the greatest story ever sold. So you can understand why that PO'd him a little. But I don't know. Who listens to the Pope? I don't know. The film, which premiered earlier this month in the United States and stars Nicole Kidman and Daniel Craig, is an adaptation of author Pullman's acclaimed novel, Northern Lights. In the fantasy world created by Pullman, his Dark Materials, the trilogy, the church and its governing magisterium, are linked to cruel experiments on children aimed at discovering the nature of sin and attempts to suppress facts that would undermine the church's legitimacy and power. Now, people that have read the Pullman trilogy, his Dark Material, says it is very, very anti-church and very, very atheistic. But in the film version, all the references to the church have been stripped out. Okay, so we're going to have a guest in about 20 minutes, but we're going to have a segment where we will get your calls. 800-989-1480 is our phone number. If you want to email me, calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com. And my last name is spelled Werbe, W-E-R-B as in boy, E. So it's W-E-R-B-E. You can go to my website, peterwerbe.com. I even have an atheist page there. And I do like to talk about the stuff like belief in God and whether it's makes any sense whatsoever. It doesn't to me, but it does, I know, to a lot of other people. And I'm looking at my clock. We have our producer in Phoenix. Billy, are we approaching? Yeah, there we go. Just as I spoke, here comes our music, meaning we're going to a break. But just when we come back, people see the importance of belief is extremely relevant to everyday life. I guess I don't. I don't even have, some levels, not even a great amount of interest in it. But I'll just give you a little Zen parable when we come back, okay? Or is that religious? Peter Werbe on the Mike Malloy Show. Mike out tonight. 800-989-1480. Right back to get your calls. Peter, we'll be back with you on the Mike Malloy Show. Mike off tonight for Christmas Eve. You know, the Marxists have this slogan, workers of the world unite, which would be a good idea. You know, everything they say isn't wrong. But my slogan is, workers of the world relax. So I'm glad that Mike has the night off, even though I doubt if he's at midnight mass or anything like that. In fact, my wife said, what do people do on Christmas Eve? And I said, well, I think most people watch television just like any other Monday night. But I don't know. Sometimes, how many people you think are going to church tonight? 2% of the population? I mean, this is a population that brags about being so religious, but it's not that religious. Maybe we'll talk about that later. Anyway, I was saying, if you're just joining us, that they let the atheists on the air on Christmas Eve. Maybe it's just some perversity on the part of Nova M Radio, or maybe they didn't know I was going to do this. In any event, I think we'll all survive, right? But I was going to tell you the little Zen story. What do they call those student monks? All of a sudden, I can't. It's out of my brain. But a neophyte comes to the gates and in the middle of the night where the Zen monks are sleeping, the ones that have been doing this for years, and banging on the door, and this the Zen monk opens the gate, and there's this disheveled young man. His eyes are bleary, tears are streaming down his face, and he says, "Master, master, master, I must know the meaning of life. I've been up for days. I must know the meaning of life." And the Zen monk, as they often do, smacks the student in the head with a staff and says, "There, that'll give you something serious to think about." So, like I said, I don't spend a lot of my time trying to figure out whether God exists or not. I don't, it's an imponderable question. So in that regard, I'm not even really an atheist, am I? I'm an agnostic, an imponderable question that we don't have the capacity even to think about in any accurate way. But here, Dan is in Gulf Shores, Alabama. He's confused by atheists. Why the confusion, Al? Or Dan, rather? Dan?
Yes. Am I on the air?
Yeah, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Well, thank you so much. I guess I'm part of the club of the spiritually homeless people on Christmas Eve that have nothing better to do than call a talk show.
There you go.
But before the conversation goes too far, I'm sorry, but you sort of answered my concern before you answered my call, is that the definition, I suppose, of agnostic is people like me and I guess you that really don't know the answer. The atheist claim to that they know the answer, which is nothing more than just fundamentalism meeting its tail. Osama bin Laden and George Bush, they're fundamentalists because they know by golly or by God what's going on. And I was just wanting to correct the confusion there. So I'll take my answer off the air.
All right. Thank you, sir. I appreciate you calling. Well, to say you're an atheist is only to confront the logical proposition that a God exists. Really, there's no way to prove a negative. And I think people that are atheists aren't so much concerned with the proposition that God exists or doesn't exist, but how that the belief in God manifests itself through organized religion. During the 19th century, radical socialists, anarchists, people like that used to refer to the religionists as the God pests. P-E-S-T-S, because they're always in your face. They're always claiming they're being persecuted, but then they want all their God stuff all over the money, all over the pledge to the flag, which it wasn't in the first place. Under God, I think most of you know, was inserted into the Pledge of Allegiance in the 1950s, so there wouldn't be any confusion with us and the godless communists, right? Well, you would think that the man who wrote the pledge, whose first name always escapes me, but Reverend Bellamy was a minister. In fact, he was a Christian socialist, if you will. And he could have very easily said, under God, he did not put that in there. But these, they always want to have this in your face all the time. I don't even think it works for them. I don't think it works for them. And they're always complaining that there's an attempt to, what do they say, to drive them out of the public square. To which I confess guilty, because I don't think they're, given our Constitution, given our secular nation, given the secular foundational document, the U.S. Constitution, that, sure, it should be not in the public square. I mean, they can, I don't know, people can walk around and say that, but to insert themselves into public politics is really poisonous. When you say one nation under God, what do you think of? I think of Saudi Arabia. All right, let's go to Randy in Arizona, listening on Sirius. Randy, hi, it's Peter Werby in for Mike Malloy.
Good, how you doing?
You have about 30 seconds. Say it quick.
I was just going to comment on basically the use of religion. It's a way of dealing with death. It's about controlling people. It keeps them from going to work and maybe, bashing the head in of a rich person.
The opiate of the masses, talking about Marx, huh?
I guess I'm implying that. And also, too, with religious people, probably the biggest pet peeve with them is they just judge people by the beliefs they say they believe in.
Absolutely.
Rather than their actions.
Absolutely. Thank you, Randy. I got to go because we got to take a break. Thank you. And thanks for joining me on the Mike Malloy Show. David Enders is next on Mike's show. Peter Werby here with you from Detroit. Mike just came back from Iraq. He's got a book out called Baghdad Bulletin. We'll see about all this surge. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werby broadcasting for Mike from Detroit, Michigan. Music from Neil Young is Living with War CD. That is the great Let's Impeach the President. I just talked to somebody who saw the Neil Young show. It's in tour now. And unlike when he was touring, what was it, last summer, the summer before, where he toured with Crosby, Stills, and Nash, and he sang Let's Impeach the President. Apparently he's not singing it on this tour. Or maybe in some of the venues, yes, some of the venues, no. Well, David Enders, let's see, is not with us, who we were going to interview. He's a journalist who has spent lots of time in Iraq. So we can continue. We can continue talking about atheists. We're actually at 10 o'clock. It's going to be to the wall with atheism, because we're going to have Tom Flynn, who is the author both of The Trouble with Christmas, published by Prometheus Books, and Tom Flynn also the editor of like this 1,000-page encyclopedia called The New Encyclopedia of Unbelief, and it has a foreword by Richard Dawkins. And I really mean this. If I'm insulting anybody or hurting anybody's feeling, I do this just because I'm so perverse. I didn't have to talk about atheism, right? But I thought since it was Christmas Eve, and maybe there's a lot of you out there that are also agnostics or atheists, free thinkers, as sometimes people like us are called, and needed a little affirmation or feel like, wow, the whole world is celebrating the birth of Christ. Well, it's obviously not, and most people don't approach it from a very religious point of view. I mean, that whole thing about, I'm going to save some of this for the top of the hour with Tom Flynn. But let me just tell you about how religious everyone is, which I don't believe for a minute. First off, church attendance is way, way overreported. They have done these studies where sociologists have gone into towns and they poll people and they say, how frequently do you go to church? And they go, oh, we go every Sunday. Every single Sunday. And they say, sure, yeah, every single Sunday. So they get a count, and it's best done in small towns. And then they go to the church, and the church will hold like 300 people. Well, you got like 4,000 people saying they go to church every Sunday. Well, it's impossible. The other thing is, with the exception of the very militant religionists that have come to prominence and actually have done great damage to the respectability of Christianity, just like the most extreme versions of the Islam have done great damage to the Muslim religion. But I think a great amount of what passes for religiosity in this country is a mile wide and an inch deep, as the old saying goes. And what I mean by that is, think about religious areas of the country. Texas, southern Texas, yeah, everybody's religious down there. The suburbs of, like, Dallas, all white suburbs, all Republican. Well, I don't know if you caught that a few weeks ago, but there was a sex club, a private sex club, where sort of middle-aged adults, aren't you middle-aged if you're over 40? Well, these people in their 30s and 40s that would have these weekly sex meetings where everybody would have sex together, the old-fashioned 1960s orgies and all that. I mean, they're pretty bored down there in the suburbs of Dallas and Houston. So I guess that gives them something to do. And they were being hassled by the cops, and they sued the city. They said, you got to leave us alone. We're consenting adults, and if we want to have sex in whatever combinations and permutations we choose, that's our business. Ain't none of your business. Stay out of it. Okay? And I think they were successful, as I remember. But that wasn't my point. I was thinking about it. And if you went to them, you know, they all assemble, right? I can imagine. I've never been to one of those. I don't know. Let me see. Depending on what time it is in your location, your locale, you know, if the kids are still up, Christmas Eve, you don't want to, you know, we don't want to be talking something that's, you know, too off color, as they used to call it. But 800-989-1480. I'm not soliciting calls on sex clubs, by the way. But let me get to my point. So here I imagine these people. There's like, say, 40 people in this room. They're all about to just take off their clothing and do whatever they do at the sex club. But I go there and I say, wait, hold on. Before everybody strips off, I want to ask you a few questions. And they come over and I say, do you believe in God? And they go, yeah. Do you believe in the divinity of Jesus? That God, it was God's son, he was, you know, died for humans' sins, and, you know, was killed on the cross and rose and all. Yeah, I do. Do you believe in the Bible? Yeah. I mean, you got to remember, they're getting ready, you know, for the sex club. And do you think that the Bible is the literal word of God? And they go, yeah. And I go, okay, thanks a lot. Enjoy yourself. And I leave, and they, clothes come off. You know, they all go for it. You see, my point is that we're living in a culture that does not affirm anything other than these dominant cultural values that have somehow come to the fore, even though they represent a very strong minority. Because if you really start, and sociologists do this as well, if you really start pressing people about their beliefs, they're get a lot more foggy. I mean, do you think Jesus is going to return in our lifetime? And I mean, it's almost like a question like, have you stopped beating your wife? Because you're, it's not that bad, but the no is, because if you say to the questioner in a poll is supposed to be neutral, you say, do you believe Jesus is going to return during our lifetime? Great, no, I think, wasn't it like 50% of the people say that they believe that? Again, I don't think these are very strong beliefs. And this gets back to the little Zen story about they've got more important things to think about. They've got much more things to think about. In fact, there's a preacher who is in Oklahoma City. I've heard this on National Public Radio a couple of times. Can't remember the preacher's name. That he says, he believes that Jesus died for our sins, so everything's taken care of. I mean, that's what the Bible says. The Bible doesn't say anything about having to accept Jesus as your personal Savior or celebrating his birthday or his resurrection or anything like that. It says Jesus died for our sins. You know, we were these nasty, horrible people that screwed up right from Jump Street, right? Didn't God know that, by the way? Didn't he know that was going to happen? Free will. Well, but he knew what our free will was going to be, so is that really free will? Isn't it all just kind of, decided in advance, but in any event, Jesus died for our sins. It's all taken care of, and let's get on with work and raising the kids. And if you have, you know, your hobby is sex clubs with other consenting adults, you do that. So there's way, way too much stock put in religiosity in this country. But you know, there's do I have that? I can't see that. I was looking for something. That, you know, that part of the Constitution that says that there shall be no religious test ever. It's weird the way they put that. No religious test ever for public office. And they put that ever. They don't want that in there. Well, now, everybody, Democrats and Republicans, falling all over each other. How much they love the Lord and all that. I could puke, to tell you the truth. Hey, well, we got David Enders finally. He probably is wondering, what the hell we talking about? Then we're going to talk about Iraq. Well, David Enders, welcome to the broadcast. You're on the air.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going good. I would have not been raving about God if we would have got you earlier, but you had to sit still for that. It's okay. Okay, you're a journalist who's spent nearly half the last 4 years in Iraq. You have a book out called Baghdad Bulletin, and also you recently had a piece called Make a Sheikh. Make a Shake, how the Pentagon transformed a contractor into a symbol of the surge's success. Everybody is making noises, even some of the Democrats admitting, well, the surge has worked. David Enders, has it worked?
No, I mean, it's worked to the extent that it's lowered some of the violence against U.S. troops in Baghdad. But working means buying off a lot of the groups that were fighting the U.S. And so... You've seen this phenomenon of the Awakening Council. The New York Times had a long front page story about it yesterday.
Sure, saw it.
And just that's just changing the nature of the war. It's not really it's people are biding their time. And there's still a lot of violence going on between Iraqi factions. And more than anything, it's I think probably setting the stage for a wider civil war in which the U.S. is essentially sort of backing both sides. So I think maybe, I mean, the administration also U.S. operations have gone down mm-hmm. recently since the surge was a jump in U.S. military operations. They put a lot of people in prison. You have this history throughout the war of I think the administration trying to sort of quiet things down or sell things at certain points, always being told that this is going to be a transitory point. Usually it's just sort of more of the same. So I don't think that really it's fair to say that it's working. And I think that's been sort of a variously defined thing as it is.
Well, in that in that piece in the Times that actually I have here yesterday, in a force for Iraqi calm, seeds of conflict. So, like you said, David Enders, essentially the United States is arming and organizing a Sunni force, these Awakening Councils, and I was just trying to put the price tag together because in that article it talks about 123,000 members of these Awakening Councils, and at $300 a month, it's about $37 million a month that you and I and the rest of the audience are paying these people to not fight the U.S. because I guess they figured, hey, what the hell? Why are we fighting these people? We can get $300 a month from them.
Well, yeah, and these guys need jobs, and that's one of the major problems. The U.S. and a lot of Iraqis say that a large reason for the success of the insurgency is because people don't have jobs, and it's a means of support, So the U.S. argues that frequently. So now, you know, when you have them doing this, it's like, okay. I think it's interesting that there was a quote in the New York Times article that was specifically one of the U.S. commanders saying, we're not trying to create two parallel governments when in essence that's exactly what's happening here.
Mm-hmm.
which is, military press conferences are kind of great for stuff like that. We're not doing this when in actuality that's exactly what you have unfolding.
Hey, David Anders, stay with us. We have to take a break. It's a little shorter than I thought, but we'll hold you over to the next segment if you'll stay with us.
Okay.
Listen to the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werby sitting in for Mike. David Anders joining us. He's been in Iraq, has been there firsthand, and we'll come back and talk to him right after this break. Stay with us. Wow, Sympathy for the Devil, Christmas Eve. The Mike Malloy Show, Peter Werby sitting in for Mike, broadcasting from Detroit. And also joining me on the air is David Anders. David Anders has spent the last couple of years, at least half of the last 4 years in Iraq. He's the author of the book Baghdad Bulletin. David Anders, where can we get Baghdad Bulletin?
Amazon.com, major retailers. It's available at University of Michigan Press. You can go to their website.
Okay.
As well.
Good. Well, now, politically, there's a big happy face on about Iraq. Suddenly, everything's getting better. Is it really? I mean, is there light at the end of the tunnel?
Assess it for yourself. I mean, the New York Times story was an echo of like what I heard when I was talking to these guys who are sort of changing sides and aligning, making this alliance of convenience with the U.S. And out on the street actually talking with these guys, you know, one of them said something, basically he said, we're against the bad al-Qaeda, not the good al-Qaeda. So this idea that, the presence of U.S. troops is like suddenly widely appreciated or not resented is not true. I mean, the same basic things that have been at work here are still at work here. The vast majority of Iraqis are not happy with the situation. There's increased movement for some people in neighborhoods, but it's because essentially with either the tacit like approval of the U.S. or the fact the U.S. simply can't do anything, or with their open support, people have solidified control of neighborhoods. And so you basically just have the becoming official of all of these sectarian divisions that have occurred in the last year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, movement inside a neighborhood might be better for a person, but they can't go to another neighborhood. It's controlled by a rival militia, and that's become very sort of official now.
Well, we were talking earlier about these Sunni-based awakening groups. And the article in the New York Times, and it said, in a force for Iraqi calm, seeds of conflict. Increasing?
Well, yeah, these guys don't trust the central government at all, and the central government doesn't trust them. And the central government doesn't really exist much outside the green zone. Everything is totally factionalized, even within the central government, by party. You don't really have a loyal military or police. You have groups that are more or less loyal to various political parties. And that hasn't changed, and that's been a very basic problem with building up security forces that can police or maintain some sort of calm. You also have vast appropriation of people's assets, of their houses, of their furniture, so you have all these refugees, somewhere around 4 million of them, and for these people to start returning, they have nowhere to go, or they're going to have to go to different places. And that, of course, is another flashpoint for violence. You have Kirkuk in the north, which appears to be getting worse. And that the referendum to make that part of the Kurdish area was just postponed. All of these things, to say it's getting better is to ignore, for instance, the refugee situation. There are all of these other measures by which you can take this that really don't suggest that things are somehow getting better.
Yeah. Well, it's getting better in the sense that there's less American casualties, but the disruption...
Well, that's gone down off and on throughout the war. I mean, if you look at it yearly, this is the worst year.
Yeah.
If you take it monthly, it's better than it was this month last year. So there could be all sorts of reasons, fewer U.S. soldiers going out on missions, putting themselves in harm's way, groups just making a concerted effort to draw back and regroup, reorganize. This happens periodically.
Well, again, back to the awakening councils, you and me, the American taxpayer, are paying these folks about $37 million a month. At some point, the United States pulls out. The Iraqi central government, the Shiite government, essentially said there's no way in the world that they could continue to pay their salaries. So it's going to be like after the invasion when all of the Baathists were kicked out of their jobs in the army. Right?
Right, and a lot of these guys are former Army and former Baathists. The Tayyar al-Sadrin, Mukhtar al-Sadr's political party, is planning demonstrations, I think for tomorrow. They might have been held today. I haven't really looked at the news today. Over the fact that one of the people running the Awakening Council, and I believe it was Babel, is a former member of Saddam Hussein's secret police. So it's kind of funny. I mean, in a very dark way, but I had friends, I know people who were part of the former government who essentially sort of lost their jobs 2 years ago, saying the U.S. will eventually come back to us.
You know,
they'll realize that we're the only force that can hold this country together, that they'll need us as a counterbalance toward the Shiite parties.
David Enders, we're out of time, but is there just, it almost is a yes or no. Is there anything hopeful in the future?
I don't think at the present time, there's been no further move toward political reconciliation by any of the parties either. So
that's the key. David Enders, thanks for joining me on the Mike Malloy Show. Again, your book, Baghdad Bulletin. David Enders, E-N-D-E-R-S. You can Google David, find lots of stuff. Thanks for joining us on the program and taking this night to be with us. Appreciate it. We are going to take our top of the hour break, get you some news, and probably about the Pope saying Mass. And then we're going to be back with Tom Flynn, editor of the new Encyclopedia of Unbelief. Stay tuned. We're right back. And if you're on the line, we're going to get you on the air. Hold on. Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werby from Detroit, broadcasting from the Motor City, what used to be the Motor City. For Mike and Kathy and little Molly, all off tonight. Are they around the Christmas tree? I don't know. Anybody, has Mike been talking about? I know Mike, at a minimum, is a free thinker. We were speculating in the first hour whether Mike identified himself publicly as an atheist or an agnostic, or just that doesn't think much of organized religion. Actually, I fit into all three categories. And joining me from Buffalo is Tom Flynn. Tom Flynn is the editor of the just-released New Encyclopedia of Unbelief. Has a foreword by Richard Dawkins, the English biologist who wrote The God Illusion. And also, a few years back, and in fact, I think 1992 or 3, when I interviewed him about this book, The Trouble with Christmas. Well, appropriate on this night. Tom Flynn, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werby here with you.
Hello, Peter. Great to be with you.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. So it's not a big deal for you to join us on Christmas Eve, is it?
Well, I treat this as the day before just another day.
Well, there you go. And I remember when we talked 13 or 14 years ago, I asked you what you did on Christmas, and you said, I don't know, I went to the office.
Well, that's what I'll be doing again tomorrow. I celebrated Christmas quite fervently once upon a time.
Yeah,
I was also a religious believer. I was born Roman Catholic and kind of shed the two things in reverse order. In my very early 20s, after several years of searching, decided that I did not believe in God. And a few years later, thought that it felt really, really strange to still be celebrating the birthday of the sun, of a God I no longer believed in. So in 1984, I stopped.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of went cold turkey on Christmas, and you really see the holiday from another perspective when you stop doing it. And one of the things that really, really struck me in that is I think most mainstream Americans have no idea how obtrusive, how inescapable the holiday is for people who, for whatever reason, don't find it part of their lives.
Well, there's a friend of mine who's listening in Beirut, where he is, and he said he wanted to get to a warm country where the Christmas wasn't celebrated. So he's went from London to there. But Tom Flynn, in your just-released New Encyclopedia of Unbelief, it has the foreword, as I said, by Richard Dawkins. And Richard Dawkins said that he says Merry Christmas to people all the time. He said it has become a totally secularized holiday. And you always get that. We've got to put the Christ back in Christmas and all of that. So he, if you ran into Richard Dawkins, he might say Merry Christmas to you.
Well, he might say Merry Christmas to me from a safe distance, but... I think part of what we're looking at there is the difference, the big cultural difference between England and America. England really is post-Christian. Only a few percent of the population attends church each day. Most Britons never enter a church except for weddings or funerals. In fact, the Archbishop of Canterbury has conceded that Christianity, as we know it, will probably be extinct in England in another couple of decades. Here in the States, obviously, things are very, very different. And what I think we have going on here that no longer is in England is that you've got this immense paradox. On the one hand, very little of what goes on at Christmas is uniquely Christian. And this is where we see the culture war types talking about, oh, let's put Christ in Christmas, and it's all commercialized, and you know we're not looking at the reason for the season. Well, we've never been looking at the reason for the season all through history. The one constant about Christmas is you've always had this conflict between the sacred and the profane sides of the holiday. But the flip side of that is that all the aspects of Christmas in American life, all the aspects of Christmas from the manger scene to Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer to paper snowflakes gets this kind of aura of being part of a Christian festival by being associated with the holiday.
Mm-hmm.
And non-Christians, especially Hindu and Muslim and Buddhist and other children in public elementary schools, this has been shown in studies, they routinely perceive all the signs of the holiday, sacred or secular, as emblems of Christianity's dominance and is threatening to their heritage.
Well, it really is, of course. It's the dominant culture. And yet I was making the point the hour before this, Tom Flynn, that a lot of what passes for religiosity is really a mile wide and an inch deep. Is that almost, if you go up to an American and say, do you believe in God? And they'd go, huh? And you go, yeah. And if, you know, you went through a whole litany do you think the Bible is the divine word of God? They'd go, yeah. And, you know, without it having a real impact on their life, that it doesn't guide much of what they do and doesn't inform much of their choices, but rather this militant minority of religionists, that particularly ones that have combined it with politics, are the ones that have set the cultural and religious and political tone for what appears to be, well, I mean, I guess it really is the dominant cultural thrust of Christianity in this country.
Yeah, it is still dominant, even though, as you say, the vast majority of people who claim allegiance to it don't really do a great deal about it. And I think the country is actually much better off for that. But the fact remains, when you're looking at American society from the outside, because you're an atheist or because you're Jewish or Hindu or Muslim or whatever it might be, these ultra-Christians who are making all the noise do have a way of setting the tone.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't conform to the tone they set, well, then you're a second-class citizen. You're on the outside looking in.
Have you ever been discriminated against? I guess I'm fortunate. I'm a third generation atheist. I mean, I just got raised up without any belief, and so I never had any reverse epiphany or anything like that. But I the only time I remember, I was in the Boy Scouts. That's right. You know, now that I think about it, I was in the Boy Scouts. And I was, for some reason or other, I mean, I would always tell kids, there's no God, I don't believe in it. And I got yanked in front of these adults wearing these silly uniforms, and one of them said, "You don't believe in God?" And I went, no. And he said, "Where do you think the world came from?" I mean, you're talking to an 11-year-old. I go, and they just berated me in front of all of my peers, and I thought, okay, and then my father found out about this, and the scoutmaster fortunately wasn't there when Dad came over, but I dropped out of it and all that. But other than that, and through my whole life, people at worst people have kind of thought I was sort of an oddball. But that's nothing wrong with that. Not that there's anything wrong with that. So have you actually had any discrimination against you?
Very minor stuff. Now, of course, I work for a secular humanist organization. So I don't have any concerns about discrimination in the workplace.
Sure.
I do remember once when shortly after I got out of college, being frozen out of a job interview because I put down on the application form that I didn't go to church.
Mm-hmm.
Now this was in Ohio, and they still ask such things. But I haven't had an enormous amount of trouble with being an atheist. Now the interesting thing. And this is held true both in my personal life and just out there in the community. I get a lot more hassle for not celebrating Christmas than I do for not believing in God.
Yeah, you're kind of dour, Scrooge. Come on, loosen up, Tom Flynn. Right?
That we have this whole vocabulary of hate speech, if you will. I mean, it's kind of the equivalent of the famous N-word. You call somebody a Scrooge, you call them a Grinch, and there's a lot of cold shouldering that goes with it, and it's really wacky when you think about it. I mean, even with my own parents, they were sad but philosophical when they learned that I was an atheist. And they were both good Catholics at that point, so from their viewpoint, they've just learned that their kid is going to hell.
Hey, Tom Flynn, hang on. We got callers on the line for you. We got to go to a break. I think I hear John and Yoko in the background. In fact,
on the brink of hell.
I have a pin on even that says, right now, I'm looking at War is Over If You Want It. I actually have one of those little anti-war pins. Anyways, Peter Werby on the Mike Malloy Show on the Nova M Radio Network. Call in number 800-989-1480. On the phone with me, Tom Flynn, the editor of the New Encyclopedia of Unbelief and also The Trouble with Christmas. We invite you to join us, 800-989-1480. Hang on, we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werby, broadcasting from Detroit, Michigan, and joining me from Buffalo, New York, is Tom Flynn. And Tom Flynn is the editor of the just-released New Encyclopedia of Unbelief, forwarded by Richard Dawkins, and also The Trouble with Christmas. Tom, let me read you an email that I just got, and I thought about this, too. Jim is listening in Madison, Wisconsin, and he says, "I think it's in poor taste to go over in a critical manner the basic tenets and questions about Christianity on this eve of the second holiest day of Christianity. If you don't care for this religion, let it go." He says he's somewhat of an agnostic, but he says, "Do you not have more pressing issues to talk about? Let me give you some ideas: Iraq, Iran, the dollar, neoliberal policies, neocons, the falling stature of the U.S. in the world, health care. And in the U.S., immigration, et cetera." So he says, we're sort of bothering about something that's not real important. Let me see. Did I do something that, Tom, are you with me?
I'm with you.
Okay. Did you hear the letter I just read?
I did indeed.
What's your response? He says, come on, let's say goodbye to Tom. Let's talk about Iraq.
Well, Iran-Iraq is certainly a very important issue, and it'd be the last to get in the way of that. But on the other hand, Christmas is this cultural behemoth that kind of takes over our culture for about 6 weeks every year and shuts it down for about a day and a half. We've been hearing all of these reports about all these people trapped in airports and these 22 tragic highway deaths in the storm. And I imagine it's going to come out that a majority of those people were out there traveling on the highways because they were going to see their family or were out shopping or what have you. So In its own quiet way, Christmas casts a very big shadow on this society. So I think it's worthwhile talking about, and I certainly think in a context of progressive radio, we shouldn't have any sacred cows. If you can't ask tough questions about Christmas on Christmas Eve here, where can you?
Absolutely. Now, I've got to ask Billy in Phoenix. Now, if I just click on if I click on another phone, will that cut off Tom, Billy? Okay, yeah, do Dave in Buffalo then, okay? Dave, hi, it's Peter Werby in for Mike Malloy, and you're on with Tom Flynn. I think you guys are in the same city. Go ahead.
Hey, Dave.
Hello, Tom. Peter?
Yeah.
To the caller about talking about something else. If I die and there's a heaven and I go, I'm going to kill the guy when I get there. And as far as the religious end of it goes, I wish everyone who is religious would be quiet or shut up and leave me out of it. But the greater issue is it is tied directly to the war. Religion is in the basis of war because it sets up you against me. Party division, human division, man against woman, man against gay, man against this, man against that. But I have a broader picture as well, and that is that about 500 or 800 A.D., the powerful, the aristocrats, people of religious power, people of money, people who were the brilliant people of that time frame.
Mm-hmm.
They had a meeting, and they got together, atheists in the church, and they all got together, and they said, you know what? We all believe in the idea of atheism, but we got a problem here. There's a paradigm or a parallel situation we have to do with business. And religion has a structure to it that if we break down religion, if we agree with you and take this down, it also we don't have a support system to this idea behind control of the working population.
Well, Dave, let me do this. We're almost at our break, so thank you for your call. I'm going to get Tom to answer. I never heard of that meeting. How about you, Tom Flynn?
Me either. That's kind of tough to answer, but Dave was touching on one issue that people bring up frequently, that if most people gave up religion, how would we get through the night? How would there be meaning? How would society hold together?
Right.
And I would just suggest that people take a look at Western Europe, where most of the population is post-Christian. The very small minorities go to church in many Western European countries. Majorities tell pollsters they don't believe in God. And the last time I looked, Western Europe was doing pretty well. In fact, their principal demographic problem right now seems to be the Muslim minorities, which are almost the only groups in their society who are not looking beyond the confines of their faith.
Yeah, they're the militant religionists in those societies, and it's kind of a strange situation because, to be sure, that because of the activities of people of Arab ancestries that have committed some atrocious acts, that kind of paints with a broad brush in people's minds that. The Muslims are the minority, so there are many ways a discriminated and despised minority in many cases, and they have these religious principles that they're insisting they have public recognition, which I don't think makes Europeans very happy.
And it doesn't work in the long run if you're going to have a truly diverse society.
I agree. All right, well, we're going to take another break. Tom Flynn will hold on with us. and we'll be back and get some calls for you. If others of you want to talk to Tom Flynn, please do. It's 800-989-1480. That's our call-in number here at Nova M Radio. Tom Flynn is the editor of the New Encyclopedia of Unbelief, and I want to talk to him about that when we get back, too. It's an absolutely incredible, enormous encyclopedia. Be right back after these. Hold on, please. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werbe broadcasting from Detroit, sitting in for Mike tonight, 800-989-1480. We've been, and still are, talking with Tom Flynn. Tom Flynn is editor of the just released, the New Encyclopedia of Unbelief, just every subject and every person under the sun, almost about 900 pages of unbelief. So there's a big expression, isn't there, Tom Flynn, of atheism, agnosticism, free thought in the history of this country and around the world?
Oh, yeah, throughout Western culture and worldwide. The New Encyclopedia is designed as a comprehensive reference work for everything having to do with free thinking, heresy, unbelief, what have you. And one of the areas that I'm happiest of in the book, we were able to attract a worldwide stable of authors. We have about 150 authors all told. And we've got articles by knowledgeable experts on unbelief in just about every area of the world. We didn't cover Antarctica. That's about all we left out.
All right. And you go to PrometheusBooks.com, PrometheusBooks.com, and find out more about it. And let's get some more people on the air. Billy and Phoenix, I'm going to let you do the honors. Let's go to the person that's been, let me see here. Let's go to line three. It's Norm in Sun City. Norm, hi. It's Peter Werbe in for Mike. And also, we seem to have just lost Tom Flynn. But go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay. Hi, Tom.
Well, Tom, I say we managed to blow off Tom. On maybe it was God's will. Maybe it was. All right, but go ahead.
Peter,
go ahead. Tell me.
It's the neocons are after us. I got 2 points.
Sure.
One is instead of atheist, because that has a lot of trash that the churches have laid on it,
mm-hmm.
get a hold of thebright.net.
Yeah.
And that gives you a different... Brights are trying to organize something like a little better than the homosexuals or the evangelicals. I don't think we'll make it, but anyway, it's fun.
Okay.
But the idea of atheists being absolutely knowing there is no God, ha ha ha, you can't do that.
Wait a minute, Norm. I'm so certain that there's no God, I'm going to right now say, if there's a God in heaven, may he strike this audience dead. Wait a minute, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, see, I was willing to go way out on a limb. Actually, I stole that from George Carlin. Thank you, Norm. Tell me how you're back with us. Sorry.
Yes, indeed.
I don't know, have you ever heard George Carlin's bit on that where he uses
the... Oh, it's uproarious.
Yeah, it is.
It's
funny.
Uproarious, but I did want to comment on one thing Norm mentioned. Norm seems to think that if you're an atheist, that means you're as sure there's no God as fervent religious believers are sure there is a God. And, well, I probably know as many atheists as anybody, and that's just generally not the case. I mean, most atheists become atheists because they no longer believe in faith. They no longer believe that you can achieve certainty about something without having overwhelming evidence.
Mm-hmm.
So I think most atheists are confident there's not a God, but don't have faith that there's not a God. And, you know, if they had some powerful evidence, if God came down and talked to them, they changed their minds.
I'd be there in a second. But I have to say that it doesn't seem to, on the face of it, it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. All right, let's go to line four. And it's Phil in Worcester, Mass. Phil, it's Peter Werby and Tom Flynn. We just blew Tom Flynn off again. But go ahead, my friend. You're on the air. Phil, are you with me?
Did you say Phil?
Yeah, I did. Go ahead. On the air.
Yeah, how are you doing, Peter? Good to talk to you.
Thank you.
I've heard you fill in for Mike before.
Yeah, always fun.
I'm a Vietnam vet, 63-year-old, and I'm alone this holiday. And I just wanted to, you know, give best wishes to everybody else, whether they're believers or not. And personally, I'm agnostic. You know, it happened about, you know, one and a half times through the Bible. But I have a question for the two of you, get Tom back. Along with Norm was saying, see, I look at it the same way. I'm agnostic, and I say agnostic because I don't know. I don't know if there's a God. I don't know if there's not a God. And I'm not going to be so certain as to say there isn't. You know, as atheists do. And
let me put it like this, though, Phil.
Yeah.
There's no reason to suspect there is. It's an imponderable question. I agree with you. I mean,
that's all I wanted to point out.
Yeah.
That you know, I hear some people say they're atheists and they're, you know, they're steadfast in that thinking as the you know, the other people are in theirs. And you know, it's amazing. Let me point one more thing out too.
Sure.
It is truly amazing. You mentioned it earlier how so many millions of people have been killed in the name of religion. You know, isn't it a shame? You know, I sing the song Imagine every day. And, you know, John Lennon, I don't think John Lennon was talking about this world. I think he's talking about another world. Because this world is really, you know, I think as a species, we ought to be ashamed of ourselves. We've lived, like, say, for the last 2,000 years, all we've done is kill each other.
Yeah,
you know,
it
just dumbfounds me. But anyway, I'm alone this holiday, as many people are, and I just wanted to let all the others know that, you know, tomorrow will come and go. People will go back to the routine of, you know, stabbing each other in the back, et cetera, et cetera. So, anyway, Peter, you have a good holiday.
Phil, you too. Best to you.
Same to Tom. And maybe you could touch some more on what I was saying about the agnosticism. Because, like I said, I don't understand how people can say there is a God, and I don't understand how people can say there's not a God. Because
right.
As far as I'm concerned, I'll know when I die. Okay.
Well, there's a little proposition for that as well. But thank you, Phil. Thanks for joining us, and best holidays to you. So, one calls oneself an atheist. I mean, I just say it because I don't. Agnostic sounds like a little bit of equivocating, but really, Tom Flynn, on a philosophical basis, this is what we were saying earlier. I don't know if you heard all this. It's a rather imponderable question. There's no reason to suspect the theist argument.
Oh no, there is no certainty about it. But I tend to look at Occam's razor, the principle of parsimony, all other things being equal. The simplest explanation, the explanation that assumes the fewest entities, is usually correct. Well, let's look at the materialist view of the world. There's matter and energy and their interactions. Okay, that's fine. We can all pretty much agree that that is out there. Now let's look at the theistic view of the world. There's matter, there's energy, there's their interactions, and oh yes, there's also God, there's also eternity, there's also the human soul. If for no other reason than the naturalistic, atheistic view is much simpler, unless there's some really, really good proof, I don't find the religious view persuasive.
No, I agree. All right, let's see if we can hold Tom on the line here and go to Al in Wilmington, North Carolina. Al, hi, it's Peter Werby. Yeah, we did it, and Tom Flynn's still with us. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Okay.
Go ahead, Al.
Al in North Carolina?
It's you.
Okay. Well, you know what? I don't really care about the whole notion of whether there's a God or not, but the reason I'm really calling is because I would like to attack the whole notion of Christmas and Christianity.
Well, go ahead.
I'm really ticked off because I finally started hearing some of the lyrics of one of the songs this year.
Yeah.
It gets forced on you after a while.
Oh, tell me. Yeah.
And one of them says that man will live forevermore because of Christmas Day.
Mm-hmm. So why does that...
And my point is that if... forget all the comfort you get from religion and that sort of thing.
Comfort, wow.
If everybody knew that this was it, this is the only shot they've got.
We'd have to do a lot better.
More attention to what goes on.
Yeah. Al, I got to say goodbye to Tom Flynn right now, so thank you for your comments. Tom Flynn, any parting words? You got about 15 seconds or so.
Well, Peter, it's been great to be with you. People want to know more about the new Encyclopedia of Unbelief. It's PrometheusBooks.com. And to one and all, let me wish you happy just another day.
All right, Tom Flynn, thanks for having joined me on the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werby here with you. So we're open line. So those of you who didn't want to talk about religion, didn't want to talk about atheism, all right, we're going to talk about the economy. We're going to talk about Iraq. We're going to talk more about those destroyed CIA torture tapes. So please join me, 800-989-1480. I'll be right back. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werby broadcasting from Detroit in Mike's absence, and he will be back, I think, Wednesday. Yeah, it'll be Wednesday night. Probably best of tomorrow night. 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. We're completely open line for the rest of the show, which has another hour and 12 minutes to go. So please join me. And I wanted to switch for those of you saying, why are we talking about atheism and Christmas? Let's talk to the hard issues. Well, I think the way Christianity is manipulated to still criticism and uses a ramrod at the head of American economic interests, as it always has from Columbus onward, I think is worth talking about. So 800-989-1480. But isn't it all about economics? Isn't money make the world go round? Why can't I think of the name of that musical set in Germany? And Billy, you remember that with Joel Grey and Liza Minnelli? I'm drawing a blank, too, but I'm sure that there'll be tons of people. You can even email me at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. But here, get this. I won't even give you the headlines from Yahoo News. Between railroad tracks and beneath the roar of the departing plane sits Tent City, a terminus for homeless people. It is not as might be expected in a blighted city center, but the once booming suburbia of Southern California. The noisy, dusty camp sprang up in July with 20 residents and now numbers 200 people, including several children, growing as this region east of Los Angeles has been hit by the U.S. housing crisis. The unraveling of the region, known as the Inland Empire, reads like a 21st century version of The Grapes of Wrath, John Steinbeck's novel about families driven from their lands by the Great Depression. This is absolutely incredible. Remember what they, from your history, maybe even a few of you out there, remember back from the early 30s, they were called Hoovervilles because Hoover was the president, Herbert Hoover, who's... was there when the great crash took place in 1929 and whose policies did absolutely nothing to alleviate any of the problems or anything foreseeing as to get to the root of what the Great Depression was all about. So they're called Hoovervilles. So shouldn't we call these Bushvilles? Aren't they Bushvilles, really? Aren't they really Bushvilles, all these tent cities that are popping up? I saw another one, of course, in New Orleans. And let's see here. Yeah. Well, I got a lot. Let me do this. Let me get you guys on the air. Here is Charles. Charles in Raleigh, North Carolina. I got more on this, but Charles, you've been waiting a while. What's up? You're on the air.
Oh, I was going to mention a few things here. We could also call them Cheney Condi towns.
Cheney. What's the second word?
Cheney towns or Condi towns?
Oh, Condi. Yeah, Cheney towns. That's that role. Bushvilles doesn't sound like it. Cheney towns. I like that. Bushville, too. Yeah, good idea.
Well, one of the things I was going to mention is, of course, is that while you had Tom on there, was the idea that actually Christmas was set up initially by the Christian religion in order to get the all the different pagans in Germany and what was then known as Gaul and Britain, because they had what was known as the winter solstice.
Sure.
Because after all, Rome didn't have its, had its taxes were around near June. So Christ was born in around the time of taxes. That would have been in the summer.
That's right. Or I was just reading something, too. I think it was Tom is listening in, is it Syracuse? Or I don't have the letter in front of me, but the other people have placed it in April. But, you know, there's not a tremendous amount of historical evidence that Jesus ever even existed. A lot of people deny that there ever even was an historic Jesus. Thank you, Charles. Appreciate it. Let's see. Here is Tom. Tom is in Madison, Wisconsin. Tom, hi. It's Peter Werby in for Mike Malloy. Are you with me?
Am I in the air right now?
You, sir, are on the air.
Oh,
go ahead.
Okay, I've got the delayed radio. I'll turn it down.
Okay, turn your radio off.
Okay, nice to talk to you. I talked to you about a year ago when you were substituting for Mike. I've never talked to Mike, but Peter, you're great, man.
Well, thank you.
Merry Christmas. The religious thing, I'm calling in, you know, I'm an artist and musician, so I don't live in the system.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm fortunate I have an independent view of things because I'm not, you know, privy to any kind of anyone controlling me. And being in Madison, on top of that, yeah, I have a little more freedom than it seems much of the rest of the country. I have lived in Europe. So, but the thing about religion, it's like, for me, it's this whole thing in the United States. I mean, I have a nephew's niece in Italy. I still have a French visa. I lived in Germany. I've been very fortunate.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody outside America, unless you're in Saudi Arabia or you're one of the, I have Iranian friends. Unless you're, you know, people around the world are not controlled by religion. I mean, we are, and maybe fundamentalists in Saudi Arabia and some in Iran.
But
I have friends in Afghanistan, and the thing is, you know, this whole thing, people talk about religion, but I quote Brad Blanton, PhD in psychiatry, ran for the Green Party from Virginia for Congress in 2006.
Uh-huh.
And all beliefs are substitution for experiential reality. And when you're really living your life, you don't need to know or believe that there's anything beyond it because you're too involved in your life. And our country is so entangled in this garbage that we're not living, you know, and noticing what's going on, because it's all about this belief crap. Which
or television. All right,
pardon?
Thank you. I said or television. Thank you, Tom. But yeah, there is not this direct life like humans have lived it for most of our time on the air. It's lived indirectly. Everything that was once lived directly has moved away into representation. So life like. I said earlier, my wife said to me, what do people do on Christmas Eve? She's an atheist also. And I said, I think they watch television. You know, they watch A Wonderful Life or, you know, Mass from St. Peter's Square or something like that, instead of CSI or whatever those other shows are. Hey, everybody's, there's a lot of economic insecurity. I was talking about those tent cities just a minute ago. Well, the increase in the incomes of the top 1% of Americans from 2003 to 2005 exceeded the total income of the poorest 20% of Americans. You get what I'm saying? Not their wealth, but the increase in their income exceeded the total income of the poorest 20% of Americans. So many people falling on hard times, people living in Bushvilles, tent cities. And Bob Herbert, who's a columnist for the New York Times, he wrote on December 22nd in a column called Nightmare Before Christmas, Christmas time is bonus time on Wall Street, and the Gucci set has been blessed with another record harvest. Forget the turbulence in the financial markets and the subprime debacle. Forget the dark clouds of a possible recession. Bloomberg News tells us that the top security firms are handing out, are you ready for this? Seasonal bonuses of $38 billion, the highest total ever. So where millions of Americans, the majority of Americans, the majority almost of Republicans think the economy is in a bad way and that George W. Bush is not giving any leadership, come on, $38 billion in seasonal bonuses. It's good in America, eh? Well, I guess if you're on Wall Street. Peter Werby in for Mike Malloy. We're going to take a top-of-the-hour break and then back to your calls, whole hour of your calls. 800-989-1480. Stay tuned. This is Mike Malloy's show, Peter Werby, broadcasting from Detroit, Michigan, in for Mike and Kathy and little Molly tonight. Are they around the tree? Are they saying their prayers? I doubt it. But anyway, welcome to the broadcast. 800-989-1480. That's the Nova M radio call-in number. And we're completely open line this hour. I'm going to bring up some subjects, but I see from our phone board here that there's a lot of callers left over from when we were talking about atheism and what have you on this Christmas Eve. So I'll get to you guys, and if you'd but on new subjects as well, or subjects of your choosing. We are completely, I am completely ADD, so I can do anything that you would like. At one point, towards the end of last hour, I was mentioning that tent cities in the suburbs are the cost of home crisis. That's the headline in Yahoo News here. And that also where the common people, the average people, the working people, the poor, and even the middle class are starting to take hit after hit after hit, economic hit after hit after hit, that it's good times for the boys on Wall Street as usual. And I quoted Bob Herbert, the columnist for the New York Times, who said, forget the turbulence in the financial markets and the subprime debacle. I think I said debacle last time. Forget the dark clouds of a possible recession. Bloomberg News tells that the top securities firms are handing out nearly $38 billion in seasonal bonuses, the highest total ever. Now, Paul Krugman, or maybe Krugman, there's always debate about that unless you've heard him, he says in his column in the New York Times, Blindly Into the Bubble, he says, during the bubble years, the mortgage industry lured millions of people into borrowing more than they could afford and simultaneously duped investors into investing vast sums in risky assets. And come to find out, too, that something like 53% of those who got the subprime mortgages, bad rates essentially, qualified for better rates. And these scumball lenders just lured them in, people that weren't savvy. You know, it's not like this is a village or a community or anything like that. It's the old buyer beware. We thought that all that stuff had gone away, by the early 20th century. Also in Krugman's column, he says, this is a quote from one of the New York Times headline, Fed shrugged as subprime crisis spread. Federal Reserve shrugged as this subprime crisis spread. The report on the failure of regulators to regulate. This may have been a discreet dig at Alan Greenspan. Remember that guy who was head of the Fed and everybody thought he was a genius? And, of course, the guy was a moron. It was a dig at Mr. Greenspan's history as a disciple of Ayn Rand, or Ayn Rand, if you prefer, this lameball philosopher and terrible novelist, the high priestess of unfettered capitalism, known for her novel Atlas Shrugged. I mean, what's so weird about this? I mean, they used to have unfettered capitalism. It was called the 19th century. Well, let me just get on a little in this, and I'll comment. In a 1963 essay for Rand's newsletter, Greenspan dismissed as a collectivist, that's one of their big words, collectivist myth, the idea that businessmen left to their own devices, and this is Greenspan now, quote, would attempt to sell unsafe food and drugs, fraudulent securities, and shoddy buildings, close quote. On the contrary, he declared, quote, it is in the self-interest of every businessman to have a reputation for honest dealings and a quality product. Now, does this guy ever read any history? I mean, what planet did Alan Greenspan migrate from? Did he not know anything about the 19th century when industrial capitalism came in and bosses worked workers 14 and 16 hours a day in some cases? And if you let out a peep, they called in the National Guard or the cops or the Pinkertons and shot you down? Did he not know that that these businessmen worked little kids, 8 and 9 years old, to death? Did he not know that there were no environmental standards, that there were no health or safety standards, that there was no decent food, that in order to have something approaching a decent life for working people and good products that weren't dangerous and you know, poisonous, that we had to put in all these collectivist, quotes, policies so that these businessmen wouldn't ruin our lives, wouldn't destroy the environment. I mean, this is all still happening. I understand that. And poison our food in the air. I mean, they're still doing this, but they're constrained to some extent. They're constrained to some extent. They got to be constrained extraordinarily more. I mean, you can't have capitalism without extremely intrusive laws that shackle these rapacious capitalists. Because left to their own resources, we've seen what they'll do in other countries. Now, for instance, I mean, look at third world countries. Look at the factory conditions in China or Indonesia. I mean, that's what it was like here during the 19th century and the early 20th century in the United States. And if it wasn't for the self-organization of working people that demanded to be treated like human beings, to be paid halfway decently, and I stress only halfway decently, and created a mass union movement in the 30s, which, by the way, was attacked so viciously by the agents of the bosses that 300 men and women lost their lives at the hands of the National Guard and city police and what have you, when we workers had the temerity to say, hey, treat us like human beings. We only want to work 8 hours a day. Of course, that's all gone as well. So I say now, the same thing holds true when unions are under such incredible assault, and they're under assault for the obvious reason, the less we can organize collectively to further our needs as workers, the more money, the more they can erode our wages, our standard of living, our pensions, everything, our health care, all of that. They want to drive that down. But the big thinkers, if you can call any of these conservatives actually big thinkers, as opposed to just small-minded, evil people who are trying to take advantage of others for their own benefit, for the benefit of a teeny-weeny little minority in this country and in the world, you have to realize that it was the union movement that created the basis of the middle class. And as that begins to fray, as they use that, the big thinkers the reason they want to destroy unions is not just to get more money. They've got so much money now. I mean, they want more. They're pathologically greedy. But beyond that, they want to destroy unions because they realize that's the financial and one of the voter bases of the Democratic Party. So it's about absolute control. And that's what these conservatives are all about. Totalitarian control. Totalizing their warpo worldview, to be sure. Isn't there somebody on this show that says, have I told you tonight how much I hate these people? The Bush administration is eliminating about $700 million in Medicaid reimbursements to schools, sidestepping an attempt by Congress to block such a move. So this is supposed to save the federal government $3.6 billion over 5 years. That's not even enough money to pay for these awakening councils that we're footing the bill for in Iraq. So that's where, you know, what a rat hole that is. Unpaid credit cards, bedevil America. Or how about this one? Billions of aid to Pakistan was wasted, officials assert. Goes on and on. And in the meantime, the national debt is growing at $1 million a minute. Did he say $1 million a minute? I did. I did indeed. It means almost $30,000 in debt for each man, woman, child, and infant in the United States. And in the meantime, the Wall Street richies paying themselves $38 billion in Christmas bonuses, which is why I say, eat the rich. They are eating us. And we have two choices, folks. One is either create an independent grassroots movement of resistance and renewal, or thatch our roofs. Admit we're peasants, and we'll go hat in hand and say, please, sir, don't kill everything so fast. Those are our two choices, I'd say. 800-989-1480, Peter Werbe on the Mike Malloy Show. And let's go to Jack in Palm Beach, Florida. Jack, hi, it's Peter Werbe on Mike's show. You're on the air with me. Go ahead.
Yes, good evening.
Good evening.
The Attorney General, the new one we have, I have three things we can do with this guy. Present the war crimes that Mr. Bush is indicted for over in Istanbul.
Uh-huh.
The next thing is to bring forward the RICO Act to get him and the vice president and 122 of his compatriots. But I heard a very disheartening thing on the radio today.
What's that, Jack?
The euro dollar is backed up by gold. I had called the senator to find out in Fort Knox if we have gold there or not, or there's an IOU on the floor.
Yeah.
I mean, why don't somebody find out?
Because you know what, Jack? I don't know, but
you
want to
hear something disturbing?
Tell me real quickly, because I'm going to tell you something. I don't think the euro is backed by gold, but maybe people can call in and tell. Okay, tell me something quickly. We've got about 20 seconds.
A new Porsche is $7,500 more now because of the euro dollar.
Uh-oh. Mercedes, all right, Jack.
Mercedes hasn't figured it out. You want to hear something about the Catholic Church?
Well, you know what? We're going to have to let it go because I got to go to a break. So thank you for joining us. Come on back and get on the air, 800-989-1480. The euro backed by gold? There's not enough gold in the world to back the currency necessary for international capital. Most of it's just all cyber fake stuff anyways. Ain't nothing real. I don't want to say that. Maybe that's the kind of thing, that's the kind of talk that'll crash everything down, right? Come on back, 800-989-1480.
Fight the battle of church and state, church and state, church and state. We got to fight the battle of church and state. Over the wall we'll come a tumbling down. I've heard about your hero, Joshua.
That's Dan Barker from the CD Friendly Neighborhood Atheist. Hey, Peter Werby here with you on the Mike Malloy Show. 800-989-1480. Dan Barker, also, I think he's the co-president of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. And let's see, so a number of people, no, it wasn't a number of people, I'm sorry, it was Jack, I think from Palm Springs or somewhere down in Florida there, who said that the euro was backed with gold. I haven't had a chance to read all of this, but I Googled it. And it said, nowhere in any website or publication is there any mention of the euro being backed 15% with gold. And another one says, but it does not look like the euro is backed with gold. If you know differently, give me a call. 800-989-1480 is our phone number. And let's see, here's Charlie. Charlie's in Fort Lauderdale. It's a nice place to be. It's 18 degrees here in Detroit, so I wish I was down there with you, Charlie, but go ahead. You're on the air.
You're welcome anytime, Peter. Come on down.
Right. Thank you.
Actually, I was thinking a lot about what the guest, Tim Flynn, I guess, the Encyclopedia of Unbelief guy, about the intrusiveness. And as I'm trying to listen on the radio, it's WINZ 940 at night, the signal gets weaker. And tonight it's not only weaker than usual, but there's Christmas music drowning your voice out.
Oh, my God.
That's how totally intrusive it is. So I saw an article in yesterday's Miami Herald that Christmas is linked to a pagan festival. They finally found a grotto of where they believe Romulus and Remus were nursed by a wolf.
Yeah.
And this is where Constantine built it, all the rituals, the same kind of things, giving gifts, bringing a live tree into the house. It's basically celebrating the birth of the sun god, and they adopted it as a part of an effort to get the pagans to become Christians. So they said, well, we'll keep the same holiday. We'll just change the name. And people are just so blind to these things, the level of belief. I mean, another article, Hoover planned to this. They always put this stuff out. It was just declassified. Planned to arrest and detain up to 12,000 Americans he suspected of being disloyal. This is from 1950. We're just finding out about it now. And then the last thing I would talk about is another thing they just released when nobody's looking today. The CIA responded to the 9/11 commission had complained that they weren't given these videotapes of the torture.
Sure.
The CIA says that they should have specifically requested interrogation videos if it wanted them. The CIA's cooperation is what enabled the 9/11 commission to reconstruct the plot. Now, I know the 9/11 commission asked them. I've seen the request for anything related, and they have the cojones to come out and say, if they didn't specifically request torture videotapes, then the CIA did nothing wrong.
This was a memo by Philip Zelikow, who is the former executive director of the September 11th Commission, and he said, just as you say, that they wanted everything related to interrogation, and it's just all smoke and mirrors. But think about this this Abu Zubaydah guy who was waterboarded, and first off, since they have abrogated all the principles of judicial review, we have no idea. I mean, did you ever think about this? Everybody takes it for granted that Abu Zubaydah was an al-Qaeda operative. Maybe, but how do we know? The way you know whether Peter or whether Charlie is actually a criminal is we have a public trial. We have discovery. We have the ability to have a defense lawyer. So all we have are the word of these torturers, right?
Absolutely. And, just that Hoover thing, the reverberations of that, this was...
Wait. I want to talk about that. Let me just finish with this.
Okay, I was going to relate it to that, but go ahead.
No, that's good, but let me go through this, because so one of the things is that people say, they tortured him with this waterboarding, and he gave up all this information, and he was tortured for only 35 seconds, so, that's not bad. You stopped all this mass murders. Well, if it was 35 seconds of it, and again, we only have the word of a CIA operative who was the supervising torturer that it took 35 seconds, and if it only took 35 seconds, why, in some accounts it's 100 hours of tapes, and in other accounts it's hundreds of hours of tapes, and all of a sudden the CIA guy comes out of the woodwork and says, yes, I did it, and it was torture, but it worked. And you say, wouldn't you want it to work? Well, and why did they erase the tapes? Because they wanted to hide the identification of the torturers. Well, how come the guy that's the CIA agent who's the chief torturer, the supervisor, he gets on television with his face there and says, here's what happened. So this is we've completely lost the constitutional guarantees that we have the rule of law. And it's like Chicago in the 1950s, where cops are kicking the crap out of people to get confessions. All right. Got to go, Charlie. Thank you for your comments, and looking for yours as well at 800-989-1480. That's our call-in number here at Nova M Radio. I'm Peter Werby, in for Mike Malloy, and we're going to come back and get more of your calls. A little more on this CIA torture stuff. What a load of crap. And there's even more disturbing information. Be right back after these. Hold on for me. Peter Werby with you on the Mike Malloy Show, 800-989-1480, 800-989-1480. Before the break, we were talking about this outlaw regime, this rogue government, this racket posing as a government. Bushco is what we call them here in Detroit on my show, like Bush Incorporated, Bushco. That's what I mean. It's a racket posing as a government to transfer enormous wealth to their corporate buddies, sucking it out of our pockets. And so they don't have a lot of morals. They sort of have the morals of bank robbers, which essentially they are. They're robbing our banks. We now, each of us, every man, woman, child, and infant owes $30,000, and they get billions of dollars in bonuses for their efforts in looting us. So this is an economy based upon looting. It's an enormous transfer of wealth, private wealth, what you and I create at the job, and then it is transferred through the government, and rather than returning it in things that we need, things that we would like, things that would enrich the life here in the United States, it's transferred to these huge corporations that that use it to further enrich their already rich stockholders and CEOs and what have you. This is a column by Alexander Coburn, and in the December 31st, hey, it hasn't even come up yet, the December 31st Nation magazine. You go to thenation.com. Ought to read that every week. Get off the internet a little. I'm sorry, that sounds, I'm being, what is that? Not the word pretentious. What is, there's another word there, giving people advice they haven't asked for. Anyways, I read The Nation a lot. I don't think you get that much from the internet. Of course, you can read The Nation online, can't you? Let me get to this. Here's what he says. He's talking about this waterboarding stuff. He says, it's all in the labeling. Former CIA interrogator, John, let me stumble over his name, Kiriakou, K-I-R-I-A-K-O-U, says he used to think waterboarding wasn't torture, but an enhanced interrogation technique, even though he refused to inflict it after experiencing it. Now that he's retired, he thinks it is torture, and it's the word to use. And, by the way, if some of these conservatives, these reptilian, that's not nice to say about our reptile brothers and sisters, is these terrible, horrible, amoral people that have drifted into positions of power, and their lackeys, these middle-class and working-class pathetic characters that support the ultra-wealthy and their conservative ideology, they would say, well, it's not torture. Why is it torture? And, it was torture when it was begun in the Spanish Inquisition. And it was, I never heard of it before. But then, you know what it was called all these years? It was called the water cure. The water cure, C-U-R-E. And all sorts of American soldiers, beginning as much as over 100 years ago, when the United States was suppressing this Philippine rebellion after we'd defeated Spain, the U.S. defeated Spain, and then we said, oh, this is going to be our colony now. Well, the Filipinos didn't exactly go for this. They revolted. The United States did a Vietnam on them, complete with concentration camps. What was it? Strategic hamlets and mass killings and all of that. But for some reason or other, there were American soldiers who were court-martialed for waterboarding, water-curing Philippine prisoners. There was also American soldiers in Vietnam who were torturing Vietnamese prisoners with waterboarding in order to get information to save themselves and their fellow soldiers from being attacked. They wanted to get battle information. But this was thought of as such a reprehensible technique, so vile, so at odds with what the United States at least says it stands for, that American soldiers were court-martialed. Japanese captors that had Americans under their control and used waterboarding on them, they were prosecuted as war criminals. But here's the last paragraph of the Alexander Coburn column. The uproar has reignited the familiar debate about torture with the emphasis on utility rather than moral principle. In other words, they say, well, it works, right? Look at the They tortured Abu Zubaydah, and he gave up all this information. We know that, right? He saved us. Little torture, 35 seconds of torture, and we saved, who knows, where they would have struck next, again in New York, maybe in Los Angeles, or even here in Detroit. He may have saved me, except we don't have any reason to believe any of this, because this is all the word of these torturers who are trying to protect their ass. They say it, because not only did they say they wanted to hide the identity for fear of retaliation by terrorists, even though the main torturer is on television saying that it was that it worked, I'm getting so far afield. Let me just read this. The retired CIA interrogator, Kiriakou, says that after 35 seconds of water torture, Zubaydah babbled out al-Qaeda's plans for attack on the Christian West, and thus thousands of lives were saved. And he reports, Coburn does in his column, a somewhat different assessment can be found in Ronald Susskind's recent book, The 1% Doctrine, based on many interviews with intelligence officials. They told Susskind that the CIA team that captured Zubaydah soon determined he was not a senior al-Qaeda man and furthermore was clinically insane. So at least this is one another piece of information. I don't know which is true. I don't know whether he's a high-ranking al-Qaeda guy that actually gave up all this information or that that Ronald Susskind is right in his book that he was not a senior al-Qaeda guy and was clinically insane, because all we have is the word, the unsworn word of people trying to protect their butts as to what really happened. But so they decided he was clinically insane. Nonetheless, they grilled him with great brutality. Frantic with pain and terror, Zubaydah shrieked out one imaginary plot after another, including planned assaults on New York's water supplies, nuclear plants, shopping malls, banks, the Brooklyn Bridge. At each disclosure, Susskind writes, quote, thousands of uniformed men and women raced in panic to each target, close quote. Thus, quote, the United States would torture a mentally disturbed man and then leap, screaming at every word he uttered. We're talking, I don't know, I'm losing the capacity for adjectives that describe all this. You know what it is? Greg Palast's book, P-A-L-A-S-T. Many of you know him. You can go to gregpalast.com. The name of one of his books, Armed Madhouse. Armed Madhouse. That's what is in control of our lives. Not the majority of us. Not the majority, but the majority of us are decent people who want to live a peaceful life, but are yanked around by these whack jobs that have gotten control of our lives. And I say it again, we either have to create a movement, a self-generated, grassroots, autonomous movement of resistance and renewal, or get ready for everything that Bushko and his successors have on the agenda. Oh, yeah, and I said, Thatch our roofs, and admit that we're peasants. Okay, let's go back to our phones, and here's Ron. Ron is in Elk Grove, California. Hey, Ron, it's Peter Werby on the Mike Malloy Show. Thanks for joining me. You're on the air.
No, thanks. I noticed that during Christmas time, the government cheerleaders of this warmongering over there, I mean, Dennis Prager, Laura Ingraham, Michael Medved and Hugh Hewitt, they're all talking in flowery language about peace on earth. What a hypocritical pile of BS, you know. But
sure.
I think an honest atheist would be much preferred over a punk Christian fake like Bush, who is basically aping Christianity. He promotes basically a vulture Christianity, you could say, tied into neo-fascism and sort of a weird cult of personality, Bush, you know, the first gay man in the White House. And the whole thing has turned into almost a genocide over there. And it used to be that, you know, that churches, evangelical churches, would promote helping the least of our brethren, feeding the poor,
yeah,
promoting peace, right? But I want to tell Bush, a message for Bush and Lieberman and John Hagee, the Reverend Fraud, that bag man for the Synagogue of Satan, that how about let's let the government, or in this case the junta, without blood already all over its hands, go ahead and be the first to, you know, unleash WMDs on another Muslim country over there, Iran, which they're dying to do. But I think we got enough. I think what we need to call for is national repentance. Most of our big box evangelical churches are little more than holding pens for hell, as the pastors say nothing about the tens of thousands of our brothers and sisters in Iraq that have been needlessly slaughtered on false pretenses. And maybe, national repentance would be far better.
Well, you know, Ron, I got one thing to say. Mike Malloy's got the greatest listeners. Thank you so much.
Okay.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much for joining me. Wow. Did he tell you tonight yet how much he hates them? Let's see. 800 almost gave my Detroit number. By the way, if you want to catch me some other nights, go to my website, Peter Werby, W-E-R-B-E, W-E-R-B-E, PeterWerby.com, and you'll get all my broadcast information. Here's John in Oakland, California. John, you're on the Mike Malloy Show with Peter Werby. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, hey, Peter.
Hi.
Season's greetings from the in the corporate state of America.
Welcome. Thank you.
Yeah. I'd like to put out two names for people to be aware of. I think they're pretty relevant. The first one is what I call the Persian version of Jesus, a guy named Rumi.
Mithra.
Pardon?
Oh, I thought you were going to say Mithra.
No, Rumi, R-U-M-I.
Yeah, oh, Rumi is very cool.
Yeah. He's the most revered poet in Iran, so if people want to understand the Iranian culture, they should really look into this guy.
And Afghanistan as well, where he lived in the, what, 13th century, wasn't he?
Yeah, 800 years ago. He turned 800 on September 30th.
Yeah, there were, that's right. There were worldwide celebrations for Rumi. People, that's R-U-M-I. He's the best-selling poet in the entire world.
Yeah, he's like their peace and love guy, tolerance guy. He's Jesus without the miracles, is actually the way I look at it.
My Tai Chi teacher always reads Rumi to us after class. Not every class, but frequently.
Yeah, if I could, I'd like to read a few words from one of his poems.
How many words?
Oh, about 10.
Ten
lines.
All right, go ahead, but you may be cut off by the advertisement. Go ahead.
Look for someone else to tend the shop. I'm out of the image-making business. Finally, I know the freedom of madness. A random image arrives. I scream, get out. It disintegrates. Only love. Only the holder of the flag fits into no flag.
You know what? You're not going to believe this, but that is my... I'm not going to have that as my epitaph. I know that well. I know that it's called No Flag. It's a great one.
Right. Cool.
All right. Thank you so much. Got to take our break. Thanks for joining me. Boy, that was really curious. Of the thousands and thousands of poems that Rumi wrote, that one that resonates with me. All right. We'll be right back with our final segment. You got time to join us at 800-989-1480. Peter Werbe on the Mike Malloy Show. Final segment of the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werbe sitting in from Detroit. How about this is one item here. Airport security lines can annoy passengers, do you think? But there's no evidence that they make flying any safer, U.S. researchers reported on Thursday. Apparently a team at the Harvard School of Public Health could not find any studies showing whether the time-consuming process of x-raying carry-on luggage prevents hijackings or attacks. They also found no evidence to suggest that making passengers take off their shoes and confiscating small items prevented any incidents. Pardon me. The researchers said even without clear evidence of accuracy of testing, the Transportation Security Administration defended its measures by reporting more than 13 million prohibited items were intercepted in 1 year. Most of these illegal items were lighters. Well, here's the problem. Pardon me. If they said, okay, we're not going to have this crap anymore. You know, we're not going to bug people and frisk them and do all that stuff to them. One little incident, man, they'd say, see? So we may be stuck with this. Here is Edie. Edie is in Montgomery, Alabama.
I'm in Dog Patch, Alabama.
Dog Patch, Alabama. Hi, Edie. Welcome.
Hi, Peter. How you doing?
I'm doing great.
You're doing a great job. I love to hear you ruminate. When you start wandering off, you say things that give me a clue, and I say, I haven't heard of that. I'll go jump on the computer and find it.
There you go.
So,
how are you doing?
You know, back a while you were talking about the horrible labor situation in the past and kids going into mines and stuff like that.
Sure.
My grandfather lost a finger working in a factory when he was 9 years old.
Really? 9 years old?
9 years old.
Wow.
Yeah, working in a factory, lost a finger.
Yeah.
And the only reason I know that is because I was little and I saw his finger was missing. I asked my mother, and she said he lost it when he was a little boy working in a factory.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And of course, these free market freaks, the only thing that they want the free market because that would drive all our wages down as well because we're in this global market. And we see what the free market does in China and Indonesia, Mexico, and that's what they'd like to do to us here as well.
And I don't understand why. I mean, it's so in everybody's face, and people do. I hear people talking. They realize that everything's going up except their wages.
And
you know, and they still walk around like Night of the Living Dead or something.
Well, I'll tell you, Edie, it's not really – people don't get a sense for what to do. If this was the 1930s, we'd know. We should all join a union. We could listen to Pete Seeger on a, you know, singing, yeah, talking union blues or
Joe Hill.
Like that. Yeah, yeah. Well, thank you. I appreciate your call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. Here is Alan. Alan's in Miami. Hi, Alan. Peter Werbe in for Mike Malloy.
Yeah, interesting. One of the things you were saying was that we somehow these twisted people slipped into our government. They didn't slip in at all. It's just, unfortunately, our system doesn't prevent those types from getting in. And the people, the more twisted and the more willing to do whatever they have to grab power, it sort of lets them in because it's all based on money.
I think that's an excellent correction. In fact, they are welcomed in. Real criminals, that people that have been convicted of violating the Constitution or violating congressional laws, like during the Reagan administration or Bush 1 administration, they're just brought right back in for the junior.
And some of the other criminals just put the money enterprise together and pay their cronies to get in, so they're still in charge anyway. It's a real mafioso setup. But one of the things I was thinking about, something you just said right now, it makes me reflect on it, about what would have happened in the 30s. What I like to do, when I refer to the McCarthy era, I call it the Great American Purge, and I think we should all get used to saying that, because that's really what it was.
Sure.
And we're feeling the ripple effects from that purge until right now today. And it's really sad, because if we hadn't done what we did, if authors and teachers and lawyers had not been intimidated, I just wrote something this week about that. It says basically that if that hadn't happened, you know, Ronald Reagan would have been nothing but a two-bit actor in Hollywood.
Sure. Yeah.
We had real free journalism, you know.
In fact, Ronald Reagan was president,
right,
of the essentially left-wing Screen Actors Guild, and then turned out to be a government fink, someone who ratted on his fellows to the House Un-American Activities Committee.
Well, then the Democratic Party went and trained labor unions who were supposed to be helping workers to go down to South America in the American Institute for Free Labor Development and teach those people down there how to be non-political.
Exactly.
Screwing them up down there and then coming back here and then disintegrating the workers' movement in this country.
We got a lot of work to do, Alan. I got to end the show. Thank you so much for being our last caller.
I like when you're on.
All right. Bye now.
Okay, bye.
And to all of you listening, have happy holidays, whatever you may celebrate, or as our guest an hour ago said, Tom Flynn, just have another nice day tomorrow. It's just another day. Billy Foster in Phoenix at KPHX, thank you for doing all that you did to make this show happen. And I think we'll meet probably further down the trail, another time when Mike's off or something like that. So my best to you, happy new year, and we'll talk again.